This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice.
Today's verse comes from Proverbs chapter 25, verse 17. Let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. So apparently neighbors used to eat each other back then, but only if you exposed your feet. This is Scripture Read Badly. My name is Ryan.
My name is Jeremy, and usually the feet are the most gross part of a person, just like chicken feet soup that freaks me out in parts of Southeast Asia. It was not delicious. It is not delicious. It's just creepy.
It's pretty much just all cartilage and bone.
Yeah, and I think maybe talons. It makes good stock, but the actual keeping the feet in the soup always weirded me out. In fact, okay, quick side story. Straight into a tangent about soup. I left my keys in my house the other night when I went out for trivia, and my house is in a courtyard that has a solid gate in it, so I couldn't even get into my courtyard because it was 11 o'clock at night. But I had also left pulled pork on slow cook in my house, so I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to go crash at my friend's house and hope that it doesn't burn my house down. And it didn't. It just made delicious pulled pork. Take that, everyone. Anyway, so today we are not in Proverbs. We're actually in the back end of Judges, which is a continuation of the same time chronologically with Othniel that we talked about last episode.
Yep.
And this is one of those... This is the part of Judges that is just showing different stories of how low the people of God had fallen. So this is not a, thou said the Lord, you must do these things. This is the opposite of just how the people behaved, and most of the time the people behaved terribly. And so we read through this like, this is awful. Like, no one's making good decisions in this passage. When sometimes I've read through the Bible and being like, is this what God's all about? Like, this is terrible. But this is not what God is all about. Huge disclaimer on what we're going to talk about today. This is not God's principles.
No, that's correct. And now, as we remember, we said in the intro to Judges episode, which I think was number 67, that we are going to be addressing this as chronologically as we can. However, the point could be made that potentially what we're about to read here in the back end of Judges happens before Othniel, but technically I think it happens in between the taking of Jerusalem and Othniel coming into his own as the judge, but it might happen at the same time or it might happen a bit before. Regardless, we remember that in one part of Israel, and that is the southern part, what will become Judah, in that region, there has been a siege that Israel has undertaken and a capture of the city of Jerusalem, formerly known as Salem, although this is yet to become the established dwelling place of the temple. That happens in a few centuries from here. But at this point, Israel is still doing some conquering. But we also remember that in chapter 2 or 3 of Judges, it said that Israel had stopped. They chose to no longer pursue the capture and claiming the land from the inhabitants like they were supposed to. Instead, they chose to settle down, often among the inhabitants of the land, or as their neighbors. And as we just read in Proverbs, neighbors were not always a good thing.
No,
sometimes they would eat you,
which is not delicious, as discussed with the chicken feed.
No, yes,
although
that's right.
Really, does human meat taste good, and is that why we're not supposed to eat it?
Oh, I don't
because
know.
It's like crack. And crack is so good. No, I'm not saying crack is so good. Second disclaimer of the episode.
All right. Well, Speaking of disclaimers, before you said that Israel was in a pretty bad place and we shouldn't emulate any of this behavior. And the first story we're going to look at is in Judges 19. And the story is the Levite and his concubine. Jeremy, what is a concubine?
My understanding is a concubine is a woman that you're not married to that you get to sleep with. But I
sleep next to in pajamas with teddy bears?
Yes, that too. Like when King David or one of the kings was getting so old, he had like a woman sleep with him to keep him warm. Sleep with him as in just next to him in the bed. But I think concubines were anything from that to actually just someone you had sex with when you're not having sex with your other wives, which to me made no sense at all when Solomon had like 700 of each. You're like, what is this guy's deal?
Yeah.
But when you think Levites, I never imagined Levites to be the kind of people who would have concubines because they'd be so busy doing the Lord's work of holiness.
Too busy and doing the Lord's work to get busy.
Yeah. Exactly, and they probably had their own children and wives, right? I just don't understand the whole concubine thing. I have a feeling God's not all about concubines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. But I also want to remind you that God works through them. It works through that kind of culture back in the Old Testament, especially with Abraham. He married his servant.
Oh, yeah.
But God still worked through Hagar while still working through Sarah. So it's always been a little bit hazy from the beginning when it comes to monogamy, I suppose, in the Old Testament. And potentially that's because God still wants people to procreate a lot and have a lot of kids and populate the earth, because that was one of the initial mandates for humanity. But I agree with you. I think Levites having concubines seems even more amiss than any of the other tribes. And I'm not quite sure if that's because I kind of equate Levites with priests.
Yeah.
And modern day Catholic priests or Orthodox priests, some of them don't marry and they remain chaste for their whole life. And so then the idea of one of them sleeping with a woman regularly as a concubine seems quite wrong, even though at this time it was less unheard of. It was more heard of? I'm not sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the opening line seems to be, or the second verse, and his concubine was unfaithful to him, but then there's a little two that says, became angry with. So straight off the bat, when I first read it, before we started talking, I was like, all right, so we're setting the scene. Levite has a concubine, and that is already a red flag. And then his concubine is either having sex with other people or angry at him. So there's conflict. So it's showing that the relationship is a red flag. And within the red flagged relationship, there's a red flag.
Hmm.
But then in verse 3, then her husband arose.
Oh, okay.
And so is this concubine already married to someone else and the Levite, who probably shouldn't have a concubine, has taken her on? So that's raging adultery already. Because I was under the understanding that normal concubines for kings didn't have anything else. Like their king was their only relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So this is red flag, red flag, red flag. And when the girl's father saw him, so now the father is involved. And the husband, and they ate and drink, and they seem to be okay with all of this situation. Is that what you read?
I think so. I think what I'm getting a little bit hung up on is the her husband and who he is, and from then on it refers to him. She brought him into her father's house. I guess that was her husband. Let's try and suss this out a bit. So there was a Levite. He was going through remote parts of the hill country of Ephraim, which, as we remember, was where the... It was a similar area, at the very least, to where Micah the Levite was. He was in the hill country of Ephraim. So this is around the same time that the Danites come and take the idols back up into Dan and settle in the north. So this Levite is wandering through Ephraim, seemingly at the same time as other Levite is taken as the household priest for Micah.
Yep.
All right, so we got that out of the way. And he had a concubine from Bethlehem in Judah. What she's doing up in Ephraim, I have no idea about that, because she seems to have wandered herself up there.
Yep.
So let's assume that she is not in her hometown, because she is from Bethlehem. It says that she was with him for... Wait, no, that's wrong. So he had a concubine in... Sorry. His concubine was unfaithful to him. Do you think that was with a different unmarried man or with her husband?
Well, yeah, because she went away from him. So they had some kind of relationship agreement that she would be his concubine, but then she got annoyed at him and went to her father's house. So she went home.
Yeah. So it was like a short-term affair.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe.
I don't know.
All right. Yeah, let's assume that it was a short-term affair in both senses of the word. And his concubine goes back to Bethlehem in Judah. So she journeys back down south, and she was there for 4 months. Then her husband arose and went after her. So where her husband was, I have no idea.
Or could her husband be the Levite?
Potentially.
If the word concubine has different meanings. Because, yeah, it doesn't refer to the husband at all, but then the rest of the story seems to be about the husband and the concubine.
Yes, but...
Does it refer to the Levite ever again? Being a Levite.
I guess we're going to wait and see. But for the moment, let's assume that the Levite and her husband are one and the same. Perhaps they had an affair prior to getting married.
Yep.
Okay, great. So she was unfaithful to him. So she slept with someone else. Then she went back home for 4 months. Then the Levite gets up and goes after her to speak kindly to her, to make amends and bring her back. And so he had with him some servants and a couple of donkeys. So that seems to be some kind of peace offering that he's bringing. And so she brings him into her father's house. And when the girl's father sees him, he comes with joy to meet him. Okay, so now the Levite's father-in-law, the girl's father, makes him stay and remain... And the Levite stays there 3 days. And they eat and drink, and they have fun. And on the fourth day, they get up early in the morning, and he prepares to go. But the girl's father says to him, "Strengthen your heart.
Have some breakfast."
Have some bread. Here's some bread. Everybody loves bread. That's that famous sitcom, isn't it? Everybody loves bread.
Yeah,
and after that, you can leave. So the two of them sit and eat and drink. And the girl's father, the Levite's father-in-law says to him, "Stay another night. Let's have fun." And so the man gets up to go, but then his father-in-law presses him again until he spends the night again. And then it's the fifth day. Jeremy, take it away.
And then he finally gets sick of it, and he's like, "No, we're leaving." And they go to Jebus, or Jerusalem, and then it refers to her as the concubine again.
Huh.
And that seems to be the same person, because that's who came with him. And he had his saddle donkeys, bloody, bloody, bloody. And then he says, "Let us turn aside to the city of the Jebusites," i.e. Jebus, i.e. Jerusalem, "and spend the night in it."
Okay, all right, that's a good little piece of information to remember. The Jebusites are the Jerusalemites, formerly known as the citizens of Salem.
Jerusalemites.
Yeah, formerly known as the Jerusalemites.
And at this point, it's not a Jewish city.
Yes, like that's correct.
Like in 12, it says, we're not going to go into the city of foreigners. So instead going to the foreign city, he goes on to Gibeah.
Okay, so then that means this happens slightly before the Israelites take Jerusalem, but it's roughly around the same time. Our timeline says that it's about a year prior, but I think it was also good to have some context and to break up these stories with the establishment at the beginning of Judges. So, sorry, continue.
Yeah, definitely. And so they get to Gibeah, which is a Benjaminite city, and they sit in the open square because no one took them in to his house. Is this because, as a Levite, people usually did take him in for the night?
Well, I've
heard... Is that a principle that we read already?
Do you remember with the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, how the angels went into the town square, and from there Lot came out to them and said, hey, shouldn't stay here. You should come into my place. From what I've heard, it's kind of like putting yourself out there saying, I need a place to stay. If you want to show hospitality to me, you can come and do so. But if not, I'm going to be spending the night out in the open. But if that happens, it's on you because you had the chance, because you saw me, because I was out in the open.
Yeah.
So I think it was kind of like that.
And also, then,
I did a quick Google search on the word concubine, and the very simple definition is a woman who lives with a man but has lower status than his wife or wives. So, it seems to me that it could mean that she is technically his wife, but he views her more as something a little bit less.
Yeah, okay. Or maybe the usage of the word husband is that he is her protector and her owner, in quotation marks, but she doesn't have the status of a wife.
Right, okay, because you can't call the Levite the concubine because of the patriarchal structure of the words or something.
Exactly.
Got it.
So then they go to the square waiting for hospitality, and a man comes and asks... Hang on.
An old man
comes in from the field.
Yeah.
And he asks, where are you traveling and where do you come from? And they are passing from Bethlehem in Judah to the remote parts of the hill country of Ephraim, from which I come. But no one has taken me into the house. And then he talks about how he doesn't need anything. He just needs a place to stay because he has straw and he has bread and wine.
Yep. Oh, he got plenty of bread. That his father-in-law, the girl's father, I guess as it keeps referring to him, made sure of that. Plenty of bread.
But then stock the old up. Man's like, nah, you don't need to feed yourself. I will. I will care for all your wants. Only do not spend the night in this square. And so they were given a house and they had their feet washed and they ate and drank. So this is like a strange turn of events, because up until this point, it seems like the father-in-law just wants them to stay to party, and there's red flags all over the place, but also not, because concubines are okay, I suppose. And then this guy's very hospitable.
Mm-hmm.
And then the story turns quite dark.
And it becomes a little bit the Sodom and Gomorrah story, doesn't it?
Yeah, very much. And the Sodom and Gomorrah story highlighted a city that was unable to be saved. Almost like the flood narrative. Yeah. They had just gotten so reckless and so dangerous to each other that God wiped them out.
Yeah.
And this is another echo of that, that the people had gotten so vile to each other that it pushed them to do some awful things. So, mm-hmm. 22, as they were making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, worthless fellows, surrounded the house, beating on the door. So you imagine this huge pack of possibly drunkards, possibly unkempt dudes.
Definitely bogans.
Super bogans. They've all got like blue singlets and footy shorts and no shoes. Probably a golf club or two.
Mullets?
And some mullets and some just shaved heads and
a few
one
beer
or two
bellies
of them
here
have gelled their hair. Yeah, most definitely. Beer bellies from the
maybe
local
some high
craft
viz.
Brews.
Yeah.
Definitely some high viz. Just come home from work. We are very much verging on saying some awful things about some good people in Australia. But, you know, if the shirt fits. And they beat on the door as in, hey, there's new people in town. Let's do this.
Mm.
And it's a polite way of saying it, but bring out the man who came into your house that we may know him. And so
this is exactly the same as Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that they want the pretty ladies that they brought. They want the dudes.
Yeah.
And weird. Yeah, which in the time, that was a very oppressive, violent symbol.
Right, yeah.
And 23, and the man, the master of the house, so his hospitality extends. No, I'm not going to give you these men because mm-hmm. that's a vile thing. Behold, here is my virgin daughter and his concubine. And so I would say that this is not the greatest reaction.
No, that's right.
But to save his own skin and the skin of this man in his house, thanks to the patriarchy, he's like, all right, I'll give you these two ladies, and you can do whatever you want with these two ladies, just don't touch my guest.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
so the man...
It's a very sexist thing to have done.
Hugely sexist.
Wow.
But from the point of view of the man, because the man is more valuable in those times.
Right, and especially if the concubine was viewed as less...
Yeah.
Than what a wife would have been. Okay.
Yeah, why would you give the man to the pack and leave the worthless, in quotation marks, ladies in the house?
Right,
and
yeah.
So then, yeah, he gives them the ladies and the ladies get abused to the point of death, I think. Is that this story?
Abused all night until the morning, and as the dawn was breaking, they let her go. And as the morning appeared, the woman came and fell down at the door of the man's house until it was light.
There was his concubine lying at the door of the house with her hands on the threshold. He said, get up, let us be going, but there was no answer. Then he put her on the donkey and the man rose up and went away to his home. So he takes his dead concubine home to the place that he lived and where he was taking her to, and then divides her body into 12 pieces to send to all of the tribes of Israel.
Ugh.
And all who saw it said, such a thing has never happened or been seen from that day that the people of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt until this day. Consider it, take counsel and speak. So it was another one of those ways that the tribes communicated to each other that we have stooped too low. Like, we should never do this again. Just like the rainbow, like, let's not get to the point where we have to be flooded. Mm-hmm. The language that God divided us with, etc., etc. This is another of those signposts where this is the lowest and we should never treat humans like this again.
Yeah, exactly. So that keeps in line with what we were saying about how this is the lowest point for all of Israel. And it is shown at the end of Judges to... it's only succeeded in this book... Sorry, proceeded in this book by the a war that takes place between different tribes of Israel, which happens around the same time. So this is bad news. This is basically what this whole book is built on. And up until this point, they've just seized Canaan. And so this is only a few years later, people are settling down, and these terrible things are happening because Israel has no leadership and they haven't held on to what God wanted.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Super crazy.
All right. Well, Jeremy, what do you think about the prophetic sign or the warning, maybe, of having a woman divided into 12 pieces?
I think it is very blunt and severely communicated. It's almost like when, I've forgotten what movie, but a king's head was cut off and sent in a bucket to someone else as a warning. Oh, maybe it was Braveheart. And William Wallace was on his way south, and he just kept sending warning signs with pieces of body to show, because they recognized the face, so they knew that he was dead, and they knew that certain things had to have happened to get to that point. And so this is an interesting warning of, why would a Levite cut up a body unless it was very bad circumstances?
Mm-hmm.
And who knows who the messenger was who took the body parts, and how they explained it, and who they communicated to. Like, would they just go to the tribe's leaders? And at the same time, who knows what else was happening in the other tribes that were almost as bad as this, or just as bad as this, that this was like the conviction moment of, we don't have to be this terrible to each other.
Mm.
So it's an interesting way to communicate something awful, but it's kind of satisfactory.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that it was the Levite himself that did it, and it seems as though it's the very next day.
Yeah.
What I'm confused about in this story is, well, first of all, the Benjamite man who was hosting them wanted to appease the people, but he did what Lot did not do in Genesis, and in that story, the angels struck everybody there with blindness, and that kind of, that pacified them.
Yeah.
But in this case, when the people of Israel were put in exactly the same situation as, well, maybe even a lesser situation, because in Genesis they were angels, they were the messengers of God, but here it was a representative of the temple or the religious work of Israel, and just a lesser woman. Mm-hmm. So even in this situation that had less spiritual gravity to it, Benjamin did way worse than what Sodom and Gomorrah did.
Yeah.
Back then. They maybe did what Sodom and Gomorrah wanted to do, but it was terrible to gang rape these two women all night. We don't know what happened to the daughter.
Yeah.
But at the very least, the concubine ended up dead, and the Levite sees it as an opportunity to make a statement.
Yep.
Instead of grieving this person that he'd known for X number of years or months or whatever, and had essentially been grafted into her family, and so now, it's just heavy stuff.
It is very heavy stuff.
Ugh. All right, well, this has been Judges 19. In the next episode, we'll get to the war with the tribe of Benjamin and what happens with that as well. Jeremy, do you have any closing thoughts about the entire thing or any advice that you'd like to give the listeners?
Don't put your daughter outside when dudes are trying to pack rape them. Also, treat people with respect. Like, just like the Sodom and Gomorrah thing, this wasn't just one day this whole pack woke up and thought, hey, we could go rape people together. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of steps before that part, and it starts with not honouring and respecting other people's dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my advice. Respect people's dignity, because we're all valuable and lovely, and dignity is quite important to us.
Yeah, very, very true. All right, well, with that said, we're on all the social medias, and you can email us as well. We're on Gmail. And if you really want, you can join our Patreon community. We'd love to have you over there. You get a extra episode every couple of weeks. And also, If you want, you could leave us a rating and review on iTunes. They could join ours. I think we both left ratings and reviews at the very beginning of the...
I definitely did.
...the podcast, and I think we're waiting for a couple more to join the ranks, and that could help get the word out. I mean, if you want, you don't have to. Or you could just tell a friend, somebody that you think might appreciate some of these episodes, or maybe if there's a particular book of the Bible that somebody's been reading through and you want to share a different perspective with them, then give them the link to this podcast, and that could be great. Well, with all that said, my name is Ryan.
And Bumblebee Tuna! my name is Jeremy. I am also here.
And may all your tunas be bumblebees.